Constructive Criticism is sponsored by Oasis Games. You can browse their fully stocked singles inventory at oasisccg.com and get 15% off of your next order by using the coupon code CCMTG at checkout. Oasis will buy any card any day on the website. So check them out and enjoy the podcast. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host Spencer with my co-host Casey.
Hey, how's it going?
And this week we are joined by none other than Johnny Magic. Say hello, John.
Hi guys, happy to be here. Thanks to Spencer and Casey for having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So for our listeners who don't know, John Finkel is the best.
Living lit. Like, I don't know how many people listen to our show that wouldn't know who he is. But in case you're just starting out and you don't, he's the best, right? Like,
he's got 14 Pro Tour top eights with 3 wins, 9 Grand Prix top eights with 3 wins, and 515 lifetime pro points. John, when did you start playing Magic?
I started playing Magic so far ago, or so long ago, that it was when we talked about it based in terms of sets. I started playing in Antiquities. I believe it was between Antiquities and Revised being released. So it was sometime in 1994, probably in the second half of it.
Oh, wow.
I was in England at the time. And, yeah, so it's almost 20 years ago. It's probably, you know, more than 19. What? So a long time ago.
What is it that you liked about Magic that brought you in?
I mean, I think Magic is just, it's a great game. It's a very deep game. It's the sort of game where, I mean, it's a complicated game. Don't get me wrong, but on some level, the base rules are, if not simple, at least not super complicated. But everything that comes after that is, there's so much complexity, so much depth. The game changes all the time as, you know, cards rotate out, new cards rotate in. Even within given formats, the metagame changes as one deck rises to ascendance, and then the other decks make it a target, and then that deck kind of falls, and then and some other decks now the target. So, I mean, the thing about Magic is just that it's really a lot of different games, and the Magic you're playing 1 year is not the same as the Magic you're playing, you know, a year later, 5 years later.
Yeah, exactly. That described Magic perfectly.
Yeah. Just a lot of layers, right? You just keep peeling them away, and you always find a new way to play, really, you know?
Exactly.
From EDH to Pack Wars, you know? Magic players will find new ways to have fun with the game.
Yeah. Speaking of Magic players, you have a charity that actually helps out Magic players, and I was hoping you would talk to our listeners about what you're doing.
Yeah, we have a charity. It's called Gamers Helping Gamers. The original idea was a friend of mine, Tim McKenna. He's the president, or maybe he's the chairman. I don't know what the leader's official title is. And he, you know, got me in. Involved pretty quickly. We give charities to Magic players. We know Magic players. We know they're a lot of very bright people. We also know that some of them aren't, you know, the best at doing everything they should do for school or for college. So, you know, we thought that we could do a charity where we could kind of reach out to some of these kids. It's probably a group of people that are smarter than maybe would be obvious to people who are doing other charities or, you know, admissions offices in some universities. And, I mean, I say some personal experience because well, I'm a pretty bright guy. I did very well on tests. I did really poorly in school. I mean, I went to college. I graduated. But, I certainly also wasn't the sort of person who is going to be, spending much time looking at all the scholarships, for a bunch of things that probably didn't even interest me. But if there was a Magic scholarship, I definitely would have been interested in it. And, I grew up at least in a reasonably, comfortable family. But, of course, a lot of Magic players don't have that luxury. It's in college now is, much more expensive than it was before. I started paying my own way in after my sophomore year, after I started to win some money on the Pro Tour. And I went to Rutgers State University of New Jersey. I think it cost $7,000 or $8,000 a year in tuition at that point. And this is only, 10, 15 years ago. And now, state schools are at least twice that much. Private schools can be as much as, $40,000, $50,000 a year. So, $5,000 a year, which is what we give our recipients, it's at least a nice step towards covering those costs.
Absolutely. And it's absolutely amazing of you guys to do this for a community that you're helping improve.
In the community, it's a very generous community. We've had lots of donations come from lots of sources. The Ports, Steve and Lindsay, they run a bunch of tournaments. They've run some charity tournaments, auctions. They've been great contributors. Kerwin's Game Store. It's a game store up in the Catskills in New York. They just have a really great, generous Magic community around there. They did an event last year that raised, I think, about $8,000. So, I mean, just this one event and that their community, paid for a year and a half or a little bit more than that of our scholarship. They're doing another event. I believe it's going to be on March 15th, assuming that the no kinks happen, but that's almost certainly going to be the date. And individual Magic players as well. It's like this guy like, Lucas Siao gave us a huge donation last year. So really the Magic community's really been great about contributing. And we felt really good about the people that we've been able to help so far. The first year we had Dylan and Douglas, and Dylan was actually going to be a senior, and after that he went to I think he got into both Harvard and Yale Law School.
Wow.
I think he went to Yale, but there's a small chance he went to Harvard. And then this year we gave it to Isaac out in Oregon. So I think we've been able to do some good stuff, and hopefully this year coming up we'll have some more great candidates.
Absolutely, and I think what you're doing is great, and you guys should be really proud.
Well, thank you.
Back in a real way that's like really going to help these kids long term. So.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our weekly topic. This week we have for card of the week, I chose Master of Waves. Its performance of the SEG this week was just, it was half of the decks in the top 16, it looked like. People were calling it green-blue devotion or, but these mono-blue decks are really coming back in force against the red aggressive decks, in no small part to Master of Waves and Tidebinder Mage.
Yeah.
John, you actually played this deck at the Pro Tour. What were you finding you didn't want to play against with these blue decks during testing?
Yeah, in our testing, the deck was pretty strong, obviously. That's why almost all of us played it. The other decks that came out of our testing were the decks that did well against it. This isn't really super surprising. If somebody doesn't play a group deck, usually they're not going to end up playing a deck that's bad against it because they probably got pounded over and over again in testing.
Right.
The deck that Patrick and Paul played, the one that, Paul made top eight with, I thought wasn't a great matchup for us. It certainly wasn't a devastating matchup. It's winnable. I actually, played Patrick once and didn't play Paul, and I beat Patrick. But it's certainly a bad matchup.
Okay.
I felt some flavors of Control could be a bad matchup. We put a lot of work into being the Control matchup. We thought it would be bigger at the Pro Tour than it was. We had, I think, a pretty good sideboard plan against it, and I think we got to the point where we were, you know, small to moderate favorites, especially at that point because the Control players probably hadn't played the matchup quite as much. Now that the whole world's used to it and maybe the Control decks have tuned themselves to be good against the Devotion decks, I wouldn't be surprised if now they were reasonably hard matchups.
Yeah, most of our testing, it seemed like Supreme Verdict decks had an overall good matchup against any deck that was trying to win with Master of Ways or even the Burning Tree Emissary decks that were trying to activate Nykthos. Yeah. Any deck that was trying to have the hard board presence, right? Go ahead, John.
Yeah, well, I feel like the key there was the Biden and also the Mutavaults. A lot of times, I mean, if you had a draw with a Biden and some Mutavaults, you know, they cast Supreme Verdict, you cast a Biden, you have a Mutavault or two in play, all of a sudden, now you just have a creature out that's just going to draw you cards for free.
Yeah. And I think that's,
you know, it's also,
I think it was Huey who said he thought the best card in your deck was actually Biden of Thassa.
Yeah, we ended up playing three back and forth. We had four for a while. We went down to three just because drawing two was kind of rough. Its value might have gone down a little bit after the Pro Tour. I noticed Sam, when he made top eight a week or two later, I think it was in Louisville, only played two Bidens. I would suspect that he knew what he was doing. I hadn't really done a lot of or any real thinking or testing in the post metagame. I also noticed that Billy played an Esper deck and did pretty well there. These are the reasons why I, you know, also think that, you know, perhaps the Control decks have gotten a bit better again. The blue decks in the wake of the Pro Tour.
Yeah, our teammate Alex Sidner actually is the one who beat Sam in the quarterfinals of that GP. I talked to him about the matchup, and you know, it seems like the mixture of removal and the way they're building their deck to the, you know, answer threats in a variety, you know, with more detention spheres and things like that, made it easier to beat decks like the Devotion decks.
Yeah, we're going into the Pro Tour; they're probably more tuned to beat these hyper fast mono red decks.
Exactly. So let's go into power rankings. And we actually have the blue-white X Control X going in at number one. They didn't have as many top 16 in the SCG this week as the model blue decks, but their finishes were higher, and I still think that the deck overall, its core is doing things the right way. You know, just
I think it's never going to be the worst deck. Yeah, and it doesn't have any unreasonable matchups, right? Like, there's not very many matchups you sit down and you're terrified of.
Yeah, when Paulo wrote his article this week, he actually called it the best deck. And the reason for that is he doesn't ever feel like when he's sitting down with the deck that he's afraid of anything he's sitting across from. Everything feels 50-50 or better. This reminds me of the Jun decks of history, you know.
Right.
The Jun from Alara deck. The Alara Jun deck. The new Jun deck, you know. Those decks were 50-50 decks. It's not like the decks are similar, right? This deck is a completely different type of deck. But the matchups feel like, oh, I'm not afraid of you because you're not doing anything that I care about.
You have a lot of very varied answers and very interchangeable ones. You don't always need to have an exact answer to any board state, right? You have the detention spheres to kind of, you know, get rid of burning trimisseries and stuff like that. You don't need the verdict right on time, stuff like that. You just have so much variety in the answers that you can draw.
Did anyone think of playing Esper at the Pro Tour on your team, John?
At the beginning of testing, we liked the blue-white X control decks. At least going into it, a lot of us thought we were going to end up somewhere like that, either blue-white or Esper. You know, maybe some chance of like a banter, a blue-white-red, which never actually ends up happening. But, you know, the decks just weren't really performing that well in our testing. You know, they didn't perform very well at the Pro Tour at all. I mean, Wafatapa made top eight, but, you know, it felt like every round I wasn't seeing very much in the way of, you know, Dex of Supreme Verdict and, you know, and, you know, Sphinx's Revelation. You know, what people have been saying, and since I don't play enough Constructed to really know about this, is that, you know, for the last few years at least, the control decks really don't do that well at the beginning of new formats. And it's only when they can be properly tuned against the decks that are actually out there and actually make up the rest of the metagame that they actually start to be more competitive. I don't know if that's really true, if that's just a narrative. But, you know, I mean, it's just interesting that, again, that the control decks did not do very well at the Pro Tour and did not seem that great in our testing. And now, you know, are the decks that are at the top of your power rankings.
Yeah. You know, when we were testing for the Pro Tour with Alex, it was very much similar. When we were playing, we wanted to beat these blue-white X decks, but we didn't really want to play one because it felt like because you couldn't control the different angles people were attacking from because they were coming from so many at the beginning of the format. You know, whether it was these mono-red Foundry Street Denison decks all the way to the control mirror, you know, the wide range that people were coming from at the very beginning of the format was really hard. But now that it's kind of settled down, you've got, you know, our power rankings have, you know, just to go off of the, I mean, number two was going to come in at Mono Blue Devotion, number three, Green Red Devotion, number four, Boros Aggron, number five, Mono Black. There's a lot of mid-range on this.
Yeah, and they're all attacking you in just a different way, too. Like, you can't play against the Green Red Devotion deck the same way you play against the Mono Blue Devotion or the Mono Black Devotion.
And that's why the control decks have adopted such very wide answers.
Yeah. Same. Like, the Detention Sphere is good because it can take care of the Bidens, it can take care of the Master of Waves, it can take care of the Planeswalkers.
And at the same time, get rid of those multiple Burning Tramissary draws.
Yeah, exactly.
Number two, we have Mono Blue Devotion. This had the most decks in the top 16, which is why Master Waves became the card of the week. You know, the deck is it's just doing the same thing again and again.
Yeah.
That deck is very consistent. I haven't played a lot of the deck personally. I don't really enjoy the deck. I don't like turning dudes sideways very much. Have you played any of the deck, Casey?
Very little. I thought it was an interesting deck and had a lot of cards that I really like individually. But just as, it wasn't really anything that I would ever really like to be doing either. I don't mind, you know, aggro decks, but that's just not my...
In the format of mono red, though, this is a deck that I would probably pick to play.
If I expected to play against mono red, you know, close to, like, 40% or more of my matches or something like that. Like, a lot of, like, FNMs where you're going to play against a lot of aggro decks, that's absolutely a deck to play.
Next up, we have Green Red. Oh, go ahead, man.
Just one thing he mentioned that I almost feel the exact opposite.
What about mono red matchup?
I feel like the mono blue devotion deck is a bunch of cards that I individually don't like. The mono blue devotion deck, I think it has a lot of cards that I individually don't really like. You know, cards like Judge's Familiar, Cloudfin Raptor, even Tidebinder main deck. You know, Frostburn Weird's not even that great. But I feel like, as a whole, the deck plays together very well, so I almost viewed it the other way, as not having a bunch of cards I like, but being a deck that I kind of like.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the other thing it's really good against, and it's so good against it that it's basically eliminated it, I think, from the field, are any of the sort of like green creature decks or, you know, or Naya White, Green, Red. It's just so dominant against those mid-range decks. Which, you know, were something of the field in the Pro Tour, and, you know, at least people thought there would be, you know, a lot of these decks going in that, I mean, I see it's nowhere on your list, and I imagine that no one's playing them because people are playing four main deck Tidebinder Mages in, you know, a quarter of the decks.
Yeah, it was very interesting that you mentioned Cloudfin Raptor, because it's actually my least favorite card in that deck by far. So, I hate that card so much.
The
card is never a good draw after turn.
And it's not in your opener, right?
Yeah, it's just so bad.
Yeah, I won't disagree with you there.
when I say I have like a lot of cards I like, not necessarily cards that I think are really good or powerful, just cards that, like Frostburn Weird, is a, you know, card that just has a special place in my heart. I wanted to play it in every constructed deck, but nobody will ever let me, because it's just not that good. But I was very excited to see you guys playing at the Pro Tour.
Yeah, yeah. No, he did good work.
Yeah. All right. So next up we have Green Red Devotion. This is actually the deck that I will be playing right now in Standard. I think it's doing the most powerful thing in Standard right now, and that's usually where I like to be. It also fits my playstyle pretty well, although the deck is way harder to play than it looks on paper. I thought that the deck would be really easy to play, like a Volokit deck or something, and it does not play out like that at all. You have to do a lot more math. There's a lot of lines. I did not realize how many lines there were with this deck until I played it.
Yeah. The deck has way more game than I ever gave it credit for as well. I still don't know if I would feel comfortable casting, you know, that many mana creatures in a game. But it's way better than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah. I know that when I played it, you know, I took second at that open with it, and it was just, you know, the amount of thinking that was involved in playing this deck
yeah, does not lend itself to anyone who hasn't played, you know, some amount of competitive Magic. I would, if I was, you know, recommending a deck to an FNM player, I probably wouldn't recommend this deck. Yeah, you have to really understand what, which route you need to take as far as your big baddies, which one of them is going to impact the board state the way that you need to go, and when to actually try to go off with your devotion and, you know, ramp the Nykthos. Yeah, and there's so many planeswalkers that you get a lot more choices than, you know, most decks. You know,
yeah, exactly.
So. But the deck is, in my opinion, doing the most powerful thing, you know. Activating Nykthos and having that much mana is, you know, as Channel Fireball put it, it's like having Toyran Academy in play. So, yeah. All right, next we have Boros Aggro coming in at 4th. This deck is still around after last week. People were expecting Aggro to come back last week and shut down these mono-black decks that were just doing nothing but dirtling around.
Yeah.
And they almost completely shut mono-black out of this top 16 with only one in the top 16.
Yeah. And it was the green-black deck that actually, you know, is basically audible to have a more favorable Aggro matchup, having just a little bit more powerful removal and things like Golgari Charm, you know, against this army of X1s. Golgari Charm is an extremely powerful card.
Imposing Sovereign, Boros Elite,
Daring Skyjack.
Yeah, all of these X1s where suddenly this becomes a 2-mana wrap you sometimes.
Yeah.
It also helps that it destroys enchantments because it destroys the Attention Sphere, Sphere of Heliod, Bident. There's a lot of things. The card has gained a lot of equity over the last month.
Yeah,
you get to do a lot with it, so. Coming in at 5th place, we have Mono Black. Last week, our guest said that he thought this was the best deck in the format because, you know, of it being the, what he said was, he thought it was the best Mutavault deck and the best Thoughtseize deck.
Yeah.
I still don't like the deck. I think that it's too,
it does too little.
Yeah, it's just
what it comes down to.
It's
right?
Way too grindy. I'm not sure. I haven't played the deck a ton. I'm still not a fan of it. We haven't had a standard event to test a lot for yet, other than that open. And when we tested, I was playing the green red devotion deck, and that deck just destroyed the mono black deck. So I had no reason to even.
Yeah, and I've tested it a little bit. It's extremely grindy. Any deck that's willing to let you get into these extremely long, grindy games, it has the ability to win these wars of attrition because it has so much card draw off their Underworld Connections, so much life gain off their Whip of Erebos and their Grey Merchants, that it's just so hard to actually run them down and run them out of answers and kill them.
It's the deck that's actually keeping scavenging you in the 75 of these green red devotion decks, too.
Yes, exactly. But, again, anytime somebody plays a Mountain and a Dude on turn one, you almost can't win playing this mono black deck.
It's going to be really hard for you. You need Whip plus other things almost every time to beat it.
Yeah.
We have an honorable mention of the red devotion decks. These decks are, they're kind of like Bay Red decks.
Yeah.
They're these Frostburnware decks that are activating Nykthos to get mana for bigger spells. Yeah. So, what would you play right now, Casey?
Either Esper. I think that it's just the best deck. Let's talk about. Where I would give a very long, hard look at Rakdos. So
okay.
I think that it, being the fastest aggro deck, I think just has its advantages right now.
Okay. John, Storm's not available in this format. What would you play?
It's a good question. Again, I haven't really played since the Pro Tour.
Right.
You know, I thought the blue deck was obviously very good there. Obviously, you know, the two finalists were a different blue deck. I liked our version a little bit more, but it's clear that the blue devotion is really strong. These other decks are pretty good. Boros Aggro did not seem to be particularly good when we were testing. Maybe it's gotten good now. I was somewhat impressed with Mono Black when we were testing Sam's matchup in the quarters. At first, it was always going to be, you know, a cakewalk for Sam, but it's seemed, you know, much closer 50-50 than I thought. You know, the green-red devotion decks, I played against Mahara in the Pro Tour. I beat him. Game one, you know, he's on the play. He just got out big, fast things, two big and fast for me, but then games 2 and 3, he got the kind of draws the deck can get where it doesn't get the right mix of mana
and
spells.
Yeah, it definitely does that. Yeah, it has had some awkward draws, absolutely. Okay, I can have 15 mana on turn 3, but I'm all dressed up and no place to go. Yeah, it can draw the wrong half of its deck for sure. So,
The fact that Billy, I know, played the Esper deck at the SCG Invitational, Billy Jensen. I would obviously play the Mono Blue Devotion deck just because I know how to play it. Well, I think it's still pretty good.
Okay.
But I would probably end up playing, if I played them both a fair bit, it would probably really be, your two top picks.
Okay.
Esper, Mono Blue Devotion. But for everybody listening at home, I've played no Constructed Magic since the Pro Tour, so you really should not put too much weight in my in my opinion, sir.
it's still fun to know what kind of decks you would want to play.
Yeah.
So.
And how much playtesting did you actually do coming into the Pro Tour? You stayed in the castle.
A fair bit.
How long? Like, other than because you were in the castle for what, 2 weeks, right?
No, we were there for about a week.
Okay, about a week.
That was basically all the constructive play that I did, but we did a lot.
Yeah.
To your comment about the Boros deck, I actually also think that deck looks like on paper that deck does not look good.
Yeah, you're just making them have it with that deck, right? It's not that different from a lot of other white mini decks that we've seen. And if they don't have it, you can't lose. Like they have to have whatever it is, whatever their answer to what you have, be it Supreme Verdict or the Golgari Charm from the green black deck. That can basically be a Wrath. If they don't have it, you're going to win.
Yeah, I mean, the deck, Cedric Phillips, when he was doing coverage talking about the deck, was talking about how, he's a big White Weenie fan, but he would never play this deck. The White Weenie decks he likes to play gain some sort of card advantage throughout the game with different cards, and this deck just never can do that. Like, its only source of card advantage would be, Brave the Elevens, targeting something you're trying to 2-for-1. And that's just not good enough, in his opinion.
Yeah. I agree. I would also be sketched out about playing the deck. But if you think that, if you're going to run perfect, it's a sweet deck to play, right?
Yeah. I wish I could run perfect every week. Anyway, let's move on to our next weekly topic, which is what did we learn this week? Casey, is there anything in Magic that you learned this week that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I definitely learned that I don't play nearly enough Limited. I learned this yesterday when we were doing coverage of our local PTQ. Good thing I didn't play, because I didn't know what half the cards on the screen were some of the time. Because they're just not cards that are on my radar enough and Constructed. So I think that I probably need to do a lot more to round out my Magic game and play a lot more Limited.
I actually learned while doing coverage a couple of things that could apply to being Constructed is I need to be more patient is something that I've learned. I oftentimes will throw out plays. I'll think about 7 different plays, and then I'll just go back to the one that I liked at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And just being more patient is something that I need to do. It'll help me make sure that my play is correct, and it might also open me up to more plays. So, I'm a very fast Magic player, and at times that's to my advantage because it throws my opponent off their game. But at times it means that I'm not thinking through my plays all the way, and that's something that I should work on.
I think that nobody will be a bigger advocate of patience as a virtue than our guests here. What are your thoughts on that, John?
I play pretty quickly. not as quickly now as I used to, mostly because my brain doesn't work quite as fast, and I. Don't play as much. My autopilot's not quite as good.
But, it's like every time I've ever watched you play, Grand Prix, you've always head in your hands, focused on the board state. Then once you've made your decisions, you're playing lightning fast. But I think you always, I always see you in the tank. But maybe it's just.
Yeah, I would say there's probably some sort of selection bias where, they're probably more likely to be showing a game or something. Something where I'm in the tank. I guess if they're just showing a whole feature match, then I'm in regardless. It's probably also just that you notice that for longer. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have to go into a tank sometimes and, figure out if, I really want to have, Indian for dinner or But I'm not saying that you shouldn't figure out what you want to do. But I also think that if you spend a bunch of time thinking about, you know, everything down every path, you'll probably get slow play warnings if you deserve. And B, you know, you have a limited amount of mental energy. And if you're thinking everything through, you know, down a million ways instead of being able to kind of focus in on the right areas more quickly, then, you know, it'll probably get pretty draining after a little while.
Okay. And that's typically why I've been playing fast is, especially for a PDQ this weekend was 8 rounds. And I don't know how big PDQs are in New York, but here 8 rounds is a round more than ever before. So, you know.
Yeah, I've been playing in a PDQ in a very long time. So I couldn't tell you. I think that 8 rounds, maybe even more, is what they are. I know a friend of mine went to a PDQ and he was 6-2 and didn't make top 8. So there was at least 8 rounds.
Yeah. Either PDQs or GPs, like these long tournaments where you're playing all day long, I don't like to get tired from sitting at a table. Like,
yeah.
I want to do things efficiently and quickly because I don't want to, you know, step away from my match thinking, oh my gosh, that was draining on me. Just like, you know, John just said. But at the same time, I don't think I'm doing it enough. I think I actually just play too fast to a fault, because I play lightning speed, you know, just out of my mind fast. I've gotten people called judges on me for playing way too fast. I still give them time to make their plays, but I'm playing so fast that it's throwing them off their game so much that they want to call a judge.
And there's definitely a balance to be had. There are times where, you know, I think I've just got it and I'll make my play. And then, you know, I realize that I didn't spend as much time thinking about what they could have or things like that. And there are times where you outsmart yourself. You're giving your opponent, like, okay, if he has these exact 3 cards in his hand, you know, that are all one-ups in his deck, then, you know, I can't win if I do this. And, you know, you just need to, I mean, that's obviously an extreme example, but it's about striking a balance between patience and making sure you're making the right play.
Absolutely. All right, let's go on to our next topic, which is our training grounds for the week. This week, our training grounds is surrounding yourself with greatness. John, recently, I think it's been the last 2 years, Star City Games has put together a team that you are a part of. And I just wanted to talk to you about what that entails. First of all, what is Team FDG for our listeners who don't know?
So Star City Games is our sponsor. They sponsor team. There are about 13 or 14 of us who play in each Pro Tour. Roughly the same people, maybe a couple people different each time. We're a pretty celebrated team. We've had some tournament success. You know, we have Kai Booty. You know, I'm there. We have, you know, Gabe Nassif. You know, so right there we have what a lot of people would maybe consider to be the 3 best players of all time. You know, of course, we'd probably be a little better if this was 10 years ago.
No, I don't.
You know, we also have other great players.
I don't think anyone argues who the who.
Yeah, we.
Yeah. I don't think anybody would disagree.
Yeah. But even after us, I mean, the 3 of us are probably not even, you know, the top 3 of the players on the team right now. You know, that's probably Billy Jensen just made the Hall of Fame, came back to Magic, and has been basically winning at the top, beating everything
right.
Except for the Pro Tour. You know, he's just been on tear in the Invitationals and the Grand Prix. Reed Duke, also been on tear, also not, you know, in the Pro Tours. You know, Owen Turnewald's another phenomenal player. We have Sam Black, who's
the best deck builder
historically
ever.
Historically, probably been our strongest deck builder. But, you know, made the top 8 this Pro Tour with a deck that he didn't design and then made top 8 in Grand Prix after and probably did some other stuff. You know, we have Brad Nelson, who's also been doing pretty well in the non-Pro Tour arena recently. I'm forgetting a ton of people. We have Tom Martell, who won, like, I don't know, it was 2 Pro Tours ago or 3 Pro Tours ago. You know, Paul Reitzel, who probably just got himself a ticket to make it on the ballot for, you know, to probably be on most people's ballot for the Hall of Fame next year with his fourth top eight. We have Zvi Moshowitz, another person who's, you know, one of the best deck builders ever, another Hall of Famer. So, I mean, we have, you know, yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about surrounded by greatness, I've been very lucky to be surrounded by greatness with Team SCG.
So how has this impacted you as a player? You've been on teams before this, right? This isn't your first playtesting team, I'd assume. Unless you're just that good. Because if you're that good, we should all just give you man of the universe. I don't even know. But I would assume this is not your first playtesting team, right?
No, but the modern playtesting team, which has probably been the way it is for, you know, the last probably 6 to 10 years, it's much different than it used to be.
Okay. As the way it's changed,
it's just much more.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it's a much bigger advantage now to be part of one of these teams. It's very difficult to, I think, do well at the high level events, especially the pro tours, if you kind of don't have this institutional advantage of being, you know, on one of these test teams. You know, the formats are so complicated. The pro tours start up right before the, right before the tournaments. The pro tours start up right before tournaments start. The pro tours start up right after the, the sets are released. So, you know, you don't have very much time before the tournaments. It's not as much just based on geography. You know, I mean, I played with the people in New York. I played with, the dead guys. But, you know, never a team that was really the sort of all-star level that these teams are now. Much more business-like about the whole, playtesting. In the past, it would be sometimes maybe you didn't really have enough time, you're doing something else, or blah, blah, blah. I never really liked playtesting for Constructed either. It's just been like a huge advantage, especially for somebody like me. It was a little bit out of touch and really out of touch with Constructed.
Right.
Because I could just piggyback on all of everybody else's work. And, in the playtesting period before the Pro Tour, I could get myself pretty comfortable with, you know, the deck and the matchups I was going to have to play. So, I was very lucky the first year I came back to make two top eights in Pro Tours. I wasn't quite as lucky this last year. But that would have not been possible at all if I wasn't lucky enough to play with the group of guys I'm playing with now.
What did you play at the Modern Pro Tour? I actually don't remember.
I played Storm.
Oh, huh. Should have guessed.
I went 8-2 there, but unfortunately my draft results were like, I think, 3-3.
Was the Modern Pro Tour not the Pro Tour you top 8 when you came back?
No, that's correct. I think I top 16, both the Moderns. I definitely top 16 Philly.
Oh, Honolulu was Standard, I'm sorry.
But then it was Standard and Block Constructed were the two that I top 8 in Honolulu and Barcelona.
So Standard was Oh, I see. I remember now.
Yes.
That's actually one of my favorite tweets of all time, that John Finkeltoken should only be used for unblocked wolves.
Yes.
All right. So what is it that – so you're talking about how this has improved your game is, you know, it helps you be able to do the work so that you're not piggybacking off of people.
No, it's the other way around. I mean, it lets me piggyback on other people.
Yeah.
Maybe I misunderstood what you said. No, I mean, the great thing about this is that I can piggyback on the fact that there are people who are very good at and very connected with the Constructed scene.
Right. It might have been the way you said it earlier. You were saying how you were just piggybacking off of other people, and now you get to join them, is what I got from that.
What I meant was that joining them let me piggyback on a lot of their work.
Right.
Which is work that I was really not positioned to be able to do myself for a number of reasons. And, you know, I definitely contribute to the testing process. While I didn't make the mono blue deck, you know, there's probably a reasonable chance that if I wasn't there, we wouldn't have played it. Of course, this is true for a bunch of other people as well.
Right.
It just so happened that I really, really liked, that I got really interested in the deck very quickly. And wanted to work on it. It was actually Gabe and Kai who drew up the blueprint. I think it was mostly Gabe. Mm-hmm. Nassif, that is, but I'm not 100% sure there. I think I've actually done a very good job at choosing the decks. In every Pro Tour where we've played multiple decks, I've never made the wrong decision.
Okay, so it must help to have people like Sam Black and, you know, Patrick Chapin there, who are these people that spend all of their time building decks. You have those people who build decks on the team. You have you and Kai and Dave who are just, you know, are able to see lines that other people can't. Just they're some of the best players. And that includes Reed Duke and Huey Jensen.
Yeah, just tremendous insight. You like all coming from different, probably a little bit different play styles, a little bit different Magic experiences. Like just being able to coordinate and discuss things and, you know, really get more insight than what any other playtesting group really can, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't really been involved with any of these other large modern playtest groups. I mean, you know, Channel Fireball does a great job. So, and you know, they have also a pretty, at least a reasonably wide range of people involved. So, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, we get a range of insights that other people can't, but we certainly get a very wide range of insights. And, you know, I think that, you know, one of the great things about Sam in particular, as V is speaking about this too, is, you know, for people who are such good deck builders, their ego comes into it much less than, maybe in some other cases. So, you know, I never really worry that Sam's developed this deck is maybe pushing it a little bit. I mean, he doesn't even push his decks that much because, he gets tied up with his deck. It, you know, again, his ego gets involved and he thinks it's better than it is, wants to play it. It's very much not like that, which is very good.
Do you guys know when Sam or these has come up, like, we'll go with Pro Card Extension. How did you know that Spirits deck was the deck you wanted to play? Like, did Sam just come up to me like, hey, dude, so you're going to play this 3-drop, and then we're going to Phantasmal Image it, and then we're going to win? Like, how did that conversation come about?
I mean, you know, these things are a process. We'd been playing some Delver decks, and they'd been doing pretty well. Sam had a different take on it, which then also did pretty well. And it was actually it was funny. I mean, the last part was actually put together, I think, by Jerry Thompson, who was playing with us at that point, which was adding a couple Evolving Wilds to the deck, which helped to, you know, to let us get enough of the black mana. And, you know, we just, you know, that version, it was just doing really well against everything. And, you know, we thought it was very well positioned to beat other Delver decks. So, I mean, you know, we felt really comfortable with it. In contrast, the very next Pro Tour in Barcelona, which might have been the best deck we played at any of these tournaments, we didn't really know. Sam finally threw it together the night before, you know, that kind of version. Played a little bit. We really liked what it was doing. But, you know, I walked in the tournament saying, this deck's either amazing or it's just going to be kind of crappy, and I don't really know which one. Sometimes it's really through just demonstrating, and sometimes it's through, you know, sometimes you take a leap of faith. And it's not so much I would just take a leap of faith because, you know, because I have so much respect for Sam, which I do. But, you know, it also really helped that we didn't have any other decks that were really any good at all. Some people were playing a bad control deck. You know, Cuneo had a deck that I kind of liked. It's like a graveyard deck, but just none of the decks really.
Yeah, that format was.
And so it's a lot easier to take a leap of faith when, you know, you feel like other options, something that you're not very excited about.
Yeah, that format was also really interesting where I don't think it actually got, like, the block format didn't really get figured out until after the Pro Tour. I felt like the best deck in the block format was Jund, but nobody really realized that until after the Pro Tour, so.
Wait, in Barcelona?
Yeah, absolutely, because that would be that block, right?
I guess I don't really know the format to really know. Our deck was kind of a gimmick deck that was obviously not going to be good after the Pro Tour. It was just, we had a really good idea of the metagame, and the deck was super well-placed for the metagame we expected, which was also the metagame that, you know, people actually played. But once you start playing, you know, cards that could kill untargetable creatures, we knew the deck was, you know, the build your own, you know, untargetable giant plan was not going to be very successful probably going forward.
Yeah. Fair enough. I'm trying to remember Bart. Oh, yeah, that was the Pro Tour that I tested with Brian Hawley for in Top 16. What did he play? I want to say he didn't play Boros. I think he played Jund. Okay. I don't remember. He was going to play that Boros deck, and I thought that deck was terrible at that Pro Tour. Because every single...
That's pretty solid, actually. That was almost the deck I was going to play.
Oh, really?
I think Paul played it did pretty well.
So what was it doing... So what was it doing in your testing that was good? Because when we were testing it, like, every deck wanted to beat it, because it was the only deck doing well on Modo. So it was... Every deck was targeting it. I've never played an Pro Tour, John, and I don't know the process in choosing a deck, but if I was about to go to the Pro Tour, I would try not to pick a deck that everyone's targeting. Is that not how, I mean, you just tested the deck, you thought that it was powerful, so you were willing to play it. Is that all that there was to that?
Yeah, and, you know, we actually, I remember our build, though, I thought was pretty good, and we really thought that the place to be aiming at were the sort of mid-range Naya-type decks, or Naya-Jund, you know, red-green, white, red-green, black, you know, the decks that really end up making up, like, you know, 50% of the Pro Tour. You know, decks with Huntmaster, and, you know, we thought that, and as those decks kind of became a little bit more about beating each other, I thought that there was a place possibly for, you know, a good Boros deck. I mean, I wasn't super in love with it, so I was happy to not play it, but I didn't think it was that bad of a deck at all.
Oh, okay.
But I think it's probably very build dependent.
All right. So what is it that our listeners can do to, you know, you're talking about how you put yourself in a position where you can learn from others and, you know, get better through these people. Do you have any advice for our listeners that maybe, you know, go and talk to their local PTQ players that are just better than them and, you know, getting together? Is that something that you ever did when you started out? Like, what can our listeners do to surround themselves with better people?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I start playing Magic in a very different universe than people are in now. The first Pro Tour I went to, nobody knew anybody who wasn't from their area. You know, I used to go to a lot of tournaments, you know, even before the Pro Tour. And, I mean, yeah, I made a ton of friends playing Magic, people I'm friends with to this day. You know, I would say that it's probably a good idea to, you know, to do that as well. And it's probably also really good if the people that you end up making friends with are also, you know, some of the best players out there. You know, I mean, I was very lucky that there was, you know, a strong community in New Jersey and also a really strong community in New York. You know, my best Magic playing friends, you know, one of them's in the Hall of Fame and the other one's, you know, certainly now better than my Magic. At the time it was a little bit worse, but, you know, that's, yeah, I mean, it's really important. But, you know, it's also a bit of a problem where a lot of the good players are probably already involved with a lot of teams or groups that are, you know, that are going to be hard for people to break into. You know, I mean, we're constantly, you know, at SCG, you know, trying to make sure that we don't let the numbers get too big, because there are always people that want to join or people that we kind of want to join, but we think that we're probably close to the upper end of what's workable already.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's a lot of it's just meeting a lot of people and seeing where you have an opportunity to work with people that you think are bright and good. And, you know, I mean, this is all pretty generic and not necessarily any actionable advice, but I mean, that's the best advice I could give. You guys would probably know more than I do since you're, you know, much more involved in your local tournament, you know, community than I am.
I do think that whether you're getting together with the best players in your area or not, trying to improve as a group and surrounding yourself with people who are willing to improve will help your game in Magic.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we've done.
Yeah, for sure.
We try to surround ourselves with the best players we can. We try to, the players that aren't on our team, we talk to them as much as we can.
Absolutely. You know, when I, you know, before I even went to my first PTQ, I I realized that I wanted to improve the community here, and I remember seeking out the players that I was like, hey, so you want to get better at Magic, I want to get better at Magic, let's do that together. And we talked about it on our playtesting podcast, where you put yourself in a situation where you're with a group, because the group will have more insight than just you and your friend will. And that's the same thing here. Putting yourself in a position to learn from others, you know, you're not going to see everything your friend's going to see. And that will be to your advantage. Right. And everybody...
that's a great point.
Yeah. Even playing with people who just prefer different deck styles. If you and your friends all like to play, super fast mono-red aggro, and that's all that you guys are ever going to play, and, you're just playtesting that deck, you're not really considering the other decks or how those decks are going to beat you.
Inbred.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was trying to think of and couldn't recall. You need to, get a variety of blood into your playtesting sessions. People are going to play different decks. All
right.
And play them well.
Exactly. What I was going to talk about is, Alex Sittner is a good example of someone that I've sought out to try and learn from. He's a couple pro points short of starting to get a Hall of Fame vote. People consider him the best player in Utah history, second only to maybe Mark Justice. I just wanted to learn from, one of the best. Aaron Marinakis, one that, I was very happy to have in the booth with this yesterday as we were doing the PTQ coverage.
Yeah.
I just put myself in a position where I get to watch Aaron evaluate a board state and see what he sees that I don't.
It was really nice having him, because he's also a very good limited player.
Yeah.
Like, twice limited player that either of us is. So, being able to get
twice is an under-exaggeration,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah. I was giving us, credit there. Maybe I'm new. But just being able to have him there to kind of evaluate these board states and these cards and these decks, with us, gave insight that, yeah, we probably definitely couldn't have given in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and you don't have to... You don't have to go to, I'm using Alex and Aaron as an example for our listeners from Utah who know who these people are. You don't have to use the Alex and the Aarons or, whoever your best players in your area are. They don't have to be the people you go to. The point is to put yourself in a position to improve. In a game of Magic, you always want to put yourself in the best position to win. Well, in the game of Magic, you should always put yourself in the best position to succeed. That doesn't have to be winning. It's whatever your goals are. So just remember that.
Absolutely. And it starts with just reaching out to anybody. If it's somebody who you play Friday Night Magic with and you notice that they win a lot, or they maybe not are winning a lot, similar to you, you're both struggling, but you can tell that they're equally frustrated with it and they want to get better.
Yeah. Just someone with similar goals as you.
Yeah. You just reach out to them and, talk to them. Hey, I don't get to play much outside of Friday Night Magic. I was hoping, if you would want to playtest with me, we could, get better.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You probably will.
All right. Any final thoughts on this topic, Casey?
No, I think that we covered a lot of it.
Right. Do you have anything that you'd like to say before we move on to shout-outs, John?
No, I think we've done a pretty good job of covering it.
All right. Awesome. Casey, do you have any shout-outs?
Yeah. Giants won again today. three in a row. Still not the best outlook for the season, but moving in the right direction.
Are you a Giants fan, John?
No, I actually, I'm an Eagles fan. also not having a very good season. Although, not as spectacularly horrendous as the Giants, although they've lost to the Giants, which is really pretty embarrassing.
Yeah.
Although we basically had, some six-string college person at quarterback. So.
Yeah, well, I don't even know how to respond to that information, actually. he might put you second to Kai now.
Yeah, I think that he just leapfrogged you.
That's fair. I mean, the Eagles did, pound the Packers today.
Yeah. The Eagles, the last 2 weeks, they've actually played really, really well.
How are they winning with a quarterback?
I don't know, maybe he'll end up being, a Superman, right? I mean, the guy hit a...
he's playing like Superman.
Touchdowns, like...
Yeah, Nick Foles, he's all of a sudden, we knew who he was. He was drafted in, the fourth round last year or the year before. People thought, he could be a serviceable backup. Maybe they could groom him and trade him for, a second-round pick.
And then, you know, Michael Vick goes down, and all of a sudden, he's, like, tying the NFL record for touchdown passes.
Yeah,
in the game.
It's honestly, I just think that he's in that system. Like,
yeah,
if you have a brain in that system as a quarterback, I think you'll be,
you'll
be successful.
You have to be smart, focused, and, you know, willing to, like, just execute the system perfectly.
Yeah. It's not like, you know, Tom Coughlin's system where, you know, every second down is a run play.
Yeah.
Give me shout-outs, John. Oh, you didn't finish yours, Casey. I'm sorry.
Oh, big shout-out to, you know, to John for coming on our show. Absolutely.
I had to get past the first 10 minutes. I'm not going to lie, John. I was really starstruck.
I didn't notice that at all, so that's
well,
good.
It did help that I met you in Portland. Although I thought that it, like, watching you play Storm in Portland might have been one of the most insane experiences of my life, because you had no right to play that deck, and you did it anyway.
And, like, just narrowly missed out on top 8.
I double mulliganed games 2 and 3, you know, in my play-in for top 8. It was unfortunate, but the guy I lost to was, you know, nice guy, good player, so I think his name is Ori. I think that's the correct pronunciation.
I remember when I was walking with you and I was asking about your deck, and when we were walking, you were like, yeah, my deck's not very good. And I was like, I've never
I was probably overselling that a little. I mean, you know, it's still a pretty solid deck, but I didn't really want to put too much effort into thinking about the format at all. And so I'm like, all right, I'm here. So, you know, because the rest of my team wanted to go Grand Prix, which I think was a big mistake, but that's a different story. And, you know, it's a fun deck to play, and, you know, I did okay.
Like, just willed that deck back into existence single-handedly. Like, everybody had written that deck off. It just didn't exist anymore. I think you were the only person with Grave Shop on your person that day.
Yeah, that's plausible.
All right, do you have any shout-outs, John?
You know, I hadn't really thought about shout-outs before this. I'll pass on the shout-outs this time. I guess I have to give a shout-out to, you know, Sam Black was voted the October Player of the Month. You know, Billy and Brad and Reed dominated the SCG Invitational. So I guess I give shout-outs to those guys. So those would be my shout-outs.
The first time you said Billy, I didn't even know who you were talking about until you clarified, because I'd never heard anybody call him that before. Is that what he prefers?
You know, I don't think he really minds that much either way. I mean, Billy is his name. You know, he's obviously known in Magic as Huey, you know, he also realized that you probably don't want to confuse anybody when you're trying to get Hall of Fame votes, you know, because the year before he actually missed out because Brad Nelson literally thought Huey was his real name was Eugene Harvey for some reason, and he missed out by one vote. We can laugh about it now since he's in, but in that case, you know, it might have been better for him to be using Billy. But look, I mean, he's an easygoing guy. He's fine with either one. I just, you know, got in the habit of calling him Billy because that's his name. He's fine with either. I mean, I think his Twitter account is like William Huey Jensen or something like that. So
yeah, it is. I actually asked him this question. He told me I could call him whatever I wanted, and I was like, okay,
all right. Yeah, he's a very, very nice guy. Very easy to talk to.
All right, I just wanted to give a major shout out to you, John, for coming on. I know you're a busy guy, and it means, you know, you're actively helping the Magic community by doing this, and, you know, your charity and all of it, just really outstanding, and I really applaud you for that. It's amazing, you know, and let's just throw it out there. You know, you don't see Michael Jordan coming on basketball podcast to the people who, you know, aren't on ESPN or something, right? Like,
yeah. Even those guys, like, not that easy.
Yeah, but Michael Jordan's much more of a legitimate, celebrity / famous person / superstar across the board, than I am. Right.
Okay. So
he has, Michael, I'm sure, a lot more demand.
Right, Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps doesn't come on swimming podcasts,
Are there swimming podcasts?
He does, actually. I don't know. I mean, have you listened to any swimming podcasts? I haven't.
He could be on every swimming podcast. He could have his own swimming podcast, and I wouldn't know about it.
I appreciate your thanks. It was fun talking to you guys.
Yeah, we really do appreciate it. Shout out to Johnny Manziel for throwing up more touchdowns this season than he did last season, and the season's not over yet. So.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Magic.